We are back again after another break. This is the Couch Connection. I'm your host, Baby Mix. And on this fresh episode, we are going to be talking about what I've been doing on my spring break and my self-care going forward. We also had Ed Campos from California on with us to talk about some hip-hop and SEL. Of course, my housekeeping items and my final thought on Paul Pierce. This part of the show, I say, let's go.
In the streets like it's common sense. Stack the money heads up like it's second nature. Gotta stay pulled up like it's second nature. Keep a chip in my hair like it's second nature. Big window make me set like second nature.
So this week that we're on, I'm recording the last parts of my podcast from the 5th through the 9th. Today is the 7th, I believe. I lost track of days since my spring break. I don't know how to act. I came to a realization that I literally bring my work home. And folks say, what do you mean you always bring your work home as a counselor? Well, yeah, because we deal with kids and issues they're dealing with and staff and their issues and concerns, especially while we're going through an ongoing global pandemic. And it seems like we're about to turn a corner. Unless, you know, something else happens and people don't refuse to get vaccinated. Right now, we're at 100 people receiving vaccinations. It might be more than that. My numbers might be a little bit off, but as I said on my previous podcast, I did get a vaccination. I got the Johnson & Johnson. It was a better fit for me for the efficacy for the antibodies and all that stuff, but it's neither here nor there. That's not why we're here. I'm digressing somewhat, but part of that self-care is taking a break from little things. Like, yeah, some of you do know I do two podcasts. I do a sports podcast, Fort Valley Boys. And, of course, I do this one. To me, it seems like I've neglected this podcast this year. Because I used to push an episode out every week or every 2 weeks. So it seems like I'm pushing an episode out every month or every 3 weeks or whatnot. It's just, I want to make sure that the content that I give you is something that's relevant for our field today. And I want to make sure that it's enjoyable and pleasing to the listeners so that they'll take away something from what we do. And I want to make sure that when I do this podcast, I have my all in it. I'm mentally prepared and I'm rested and I'm clear-minded what I talk about. So I realized that with me getting COVID-19 earlier this year, that I had COVID-19, I should have been resting. I didn't have the hellacious symptoms that some people have encountered or been hospitalized or anything like that. I was still working from home. I was still doing my sports podcast when I had COVID. I was doing a lot of things that seem out of the normal for some folks, but that's just been my personality, that I work hard and I'm going to make sure that I do my job properly and everything. And what I didn't realize for what I dealt with between when I got COVID in January and really to March, I didn't realize until just thinking about it, I had a little bit of COVID fog. I'm pretty good at remembering a lot of stuff. I miss an email or two here or forget some stuff and get a little more fatigued or whatever. Also still suffer headaches every now and then since I dealt with COVID, so I've been dealing with headaches also. But the one thing about my self-care, what I do is I make sure I do no work after 4:30. this is self-care for anybody that's a school counselor or even education, unless you got a grade papers. If it can't get done by 4:30, I don't worry about it till the next day, because it's still going to be there. I'm a 220-day employee, so work is never going to end. So pretty much, I essentially work year-round. That's one of the main differences for me working in Henry County versus Bibb County, because we were middle school counselors, were the same counselors as teachers. High school counselors got 10 extra days. Of course, to me, that's not enough, but it's who's me to say what they need in Bibb County, since I don't work there anymore. A lot more is required of us as far as for counselors in Henry County, so that I don't begrudge that, because I like working, and it's indicative of our position, what we do. So those days are needed for what we do. But at 4:30, once I finish enter my time and clear my desk, or you know, finish my afternoon duty, code my time at school if I have to, I started leaving my laptop at work a couple weeks ago. My laptop bag is sitting right next to my desk. My laptop is on my desk. I do not bring it home at all. Unless it's something major from my principal, I do not touch my work laptop or my home desktop when I get home about 6 o'clock in the evening. I do not touch it. Because even just sitting in the house, not saying anything with anybody, just being there, my family, not having to worry about opening my laptop, worry about a schedule change or something for PBIS, anything like that. What I was doing in my previous county, because there are times I would stay up to 1 o'clock in the morning working on certain things, make sure the data points are right or the data is in the curriculum, just aggregating this and that. I do not do any work after 4:30. That might seem blasphemous for us, but the reason why I could do that at 4:30 is because I do a lot of my stuff on the front end. So that way, I don't have to do it on the back end, which is my at-home time. Because I already commute an hour each way to work, and I need to get as much rest as possible tomorrow. And I'm already a person that don't get a lot of sleep already as it is. So my first self-care is to not to worry about work after 4:30. I don't do anything that has to do with school counseling after 4:30. Some people don't believe that, but I had to learn that the hard way. I had to learn that the hard way when I switched counties, and I feel like I'm still going to be here. My wife's mom was a social worker for 30 years. Her desk was never clean. Her desk was never clean because the work was never done. The only time her desk was clean was when she retired. And I had too many things that I want to do, and I have goals in mind that I have to prepare myself for, and I cannot be effective as a father or a husband, as whatever goals I want to do, if I'm constantly worried about the things that I do at school after 4:30. Now, granted, if I get a call or email about a student, that's an emergency. That, of course, that's going to take precedent. I'm going to take care of that. I had to have it a couple times where I've dealt with it. But I do not do any work after 4:30. No. I was a beacon editor for the last 2 years. I learned the hard way. I was tired. I was editing papers and working on stuff after 10, 11 o'clock. I was tired. I was frustrated. You know, just tired and frustrated because I'm up late working on stuff, but that's part of the job too. But I do not do any work after 4:30 now. I don't even bring my laptop home. I know that seems like I'm just rambling, but those are two self-care items that I've used in the last month, and it feels freeing walking out of my building, and I don't have to worry about doing any work at home because I'm not tied to it. not unless it's an emergency. It's so liberating to do that. And I want y'all to try that for a week. Don't take your work computer home. He's a friend of mine, Jim Deacon. He's Texas Council has on podcast. I was on his podcast a couple years ago, and he reciprocated for me a year and a half ago. He said he don't even bring his charger home. Well, I get that. If it goes dead, it goes dead. I upgraded. Just don't even bring my laptop home. And I can honestly thank him for part of that. I also can thank my wife. Also, she said to work. She told me this years ago. Work is your work is never gonna be done as a counselor, social work counselor. Same line. You always gonna have work. Your desk never gonna be clean until you leave that job. That's a fair point. When I was in Bibb County, my job was never done until I left Bibb County. That's the only time my desk was clean. The last day I was cleaning my desk and turning my stuff in. That's the last time my desk was clean in Bibb County when I left. And my first day. So, for those out there, I know I put myself here early, but just something I had to say off the top for why I haven't been constantly pushing out episodes and everything, but you gotta take care of yourself sometimes. I mean, I love my podcast, I love doing it, and I just want to make sure the content I push to you all is something that you can use as a professional development. As I said in my first episode, this is something for either a first year counselor or somebody that's been doing it for 20 years. I want to also tie in the fact that I'm still kind of grieving a little bit over Greer Jackson, Deidre. She's my friend, and I miss her and everything. And just I realized she worked while to her last days, and I can't do that. I have too many. And she was a worker. She loved the kids and she loved the work. And I'm learning from that the work is gonna be there. And when you're gone, that position gonna have to be filled because they finally posted her position on their kind of site. So your role will be filled when you're gone. So take care of you no matter what, because the work is always going to be there. We'll be right back with Ed Campos to talk about SEL and hip-hop right after this. And we are here on the Council Connection. I am your host, Fabian Vicks, and I have a great guest coming in with me. His name is Ed Campos from the lovely state of California, and I'm jealous right now because he's in California. Ed, what's the deal, man? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good, Fabian. Yeah, it's good to meet you. Nice to be here. And, I mean, where I'm at in California, it's, you know, it's not L.A., it's not the Bay. I live in Central California, so it's like in the middle agricultural area. So there are some palm trees, but it's not what people think of when they think of California. Like, I think my area looks more like, the farming area. It's definitely heavily farmed, a lot of grapes, a lot of oranges, a lot of, a lot of ag, a lot of dairies.
Yeah. California though.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Just saying. My dad was in the military. He went all over the place. We lived in Riverside, right, 30 minutes from San Diego. So I'm like, I remember lived out there for 3 years. I remember it rained twice.
Oh.
And then we had went to conference 3 years ago. It didn't rain not once. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't humid. It was just, I started to turn my 2 week in and 2 weeks in and just find a job and just hope for the best.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can't do this Georgia weather no more.
How's it out there right now?
Oh man, Georgia's bipolar. It was nice and hot Sunday. Now it's 50s.
Mm.
With some rain. Tomorrow probably 80. Then it might snow on Friday. Who knows? I don't know. I only bother looking at the weather, so.
Yeah. It's like a gamble every day.
Yeah, you just roll the dice. Hey, 7-11. 7-11.
Just hope for some sun. Oh man.
For the folks that might not know who you are, just give a little description about yourself, where you're from, you know, your education experience and your work experience, that type of stuff, you know.
All right. My name's Ed Campos. I'm currently a consultant for Kings County Office of Education in Central California, kind of near Fresno, if people know where that's at, like an hour southwest of Fresno. My background in education is I taught high school math and computer science for about 15 years in the classroom here in the Central Valley before starting the consulting thing. And but even before that, I was before I became a teacher, I was a software programmer. I did that coding thing for like 3 years right before I started teaching. Because when I was in school, I was at UCLA. I got that was kind of when the e-commerce boom was happening, and I was like a math major, but ended up getting like a computing minor at the very end because I had a good friend who was like, "Hey, we need to learn how to do this programming thing. We need to learn how to code because they're offering signing bonuses and stuff to get this." I was like, "Shh, let's do that thing. Then let's get that signing bonus." So I did that software, got a little minor in computing at UCLA, along with my bachelor's in math, and then I did a consultant, like software consulting programming thing for 3 years. But it was good money. I mean, as a kid who didn't have a lot of money growing up, single parent household, I kind of thought that's what I wanted. But then realized like it was cool. I was living kind of good, living kind of too fast, to be honest. And then I was like, man, I kind of just always, then I started realizing that I just really like teaching. I really like helping my friends when I was in college, like when they would come to my apartment room, like getting help with math and their computer science projects. So I just, that kind of is worth more to me. I realized that I value that a whole lot. So then I was kind of like, I think I was meant for education. So getting into it and took probably like a 50% pay cut to become a teacher from my software job. Which stung, and I think my friends were like worried I was having like a what is it called? Mental breakdown or something like that. But I haven't looked back since. You know what I mean? I'm happy. I'm extremely happy with my life and the way it's played out. Like with the stuff I get to do now is like fulfilling and still way more valuable than some stock options and signing bonuses and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm gonna start this before we get to your programs that you're working on. With you being in education, having the experience and your background in computer program, what is one thing that you would change as far as the student information system for educators to be more effective?
That's a good question, man. Well, I think a problem that I see, like I have issues with a lot of them.
Let's start with I mean, you could jump in. What's the one that you're familiar with?
So we've used like Aries and I think PowerSchool are the two that I've used before. And I mean, I think the biggest problem is, especially having worked in the software industry, so many schools do things differently, but they just take these contracts as is from these software companies. And like I worked at an independent study high school, which did things like totally different. Even when it comes to independent study, like stuff is all over the map. But when it comes to software, like you're paying like millions of dollars sometimes for these contracts, for these, and it's got to come with some consultancy work to modify it and customize it to what you want. And I think that's the biggest issue, is like either they don't follow up on it or I think they're just getting taken advantage of and say like, here it is as is, but like, you don't know, all they got to do is send one consultant to like hang out in your school for like a week or two. I mean, that's what they used to send us to do to Fortune 500 companies, to Boeing and stuff like that. And then we figure out that workflow. Okay, this is going to make it easier. And then boom, boom, boom. And then you customize it to what you want, but it's taking that one size fits all software. That's not going to work for anybody. And then it's a train wreck, you know? So I think the biggest problem, if I had to sum it up, was that schools don't know their rights and don't know that like you can request. I mean, shoot, as much money as schools waste too, like even if they had to pay extra for it, but it should be included in the licensing for that student information system for God knows how much they're charging, you know?
One more follow up. I know we got a great program, but this is fascinating to me because I like technology. I'm not as, you know, you're the, like I said, like I told you before we got on, you're the expert. Wouldn't it be feasible for the department, the Department of Education with the new change and everything? Wouldn't this be a great opportunity for them to create some type of streamlined national database for transcripts, for documentation, so that way when students transfer, you ain't got to wait 35 days for records to find out, oh, this child was gifted, and it was an Algebra 1, but they've been sitting in a regular A grade math class. Mm-hmm. How would that possibly work, or could you foresee something like happening within the next, what would be generous, 8 years maybe?
I mean, you know, it's like, what is it called? Like, so you have like, I think it's called, it's been a long time since I've done this, but you have like standards, like HTML standards or XML standards, like that each industry has. Okay, if you have a banking transaction, the banking transaction requires this, 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 and this. You know, like there's certain fields, no matter what the bank. And then they agree upon those standards, and then they say, okay, no matter what bank, you can just transfer this information. So because those exist in those same fields, like GPA is the same GPA, you know, student name, ID number. I don't know how that works. I would think like, I mean, banks are transferring secure information all the time. So if you're transferring secure student information, I would think it would just be something like that. Like you just have to agree. These are the GPA, that is, these are the transcript standards, and this is it moving forward. And then like every transcript has to fit in this format, and it could have extra stuff, but it has to have these things to be able to transfer over. You know what I mean? That's yeah. What kind of, that's the way software has, and the information IT industry has been working, you know, like that. So, but it's been a long time, but I do know, yeah, like every little segment of an industry has to have, okay, we got to agree upon these XML standards. That's what it is. So then I know I can do, get creative with my workflow, whatever, and it's going to hand it off to you. It just has to fit this structure, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I know that's not having any time soon, but it's just too much light, right? I mean, I hate having to create one account for Virginia just to request transcripts. Then I have to get verified. Then I got to wait a week. Then I got to use the old fax machine because Texas don't use that. And then find out the student was gifted and had an Algebra 1 class, and I can't put them in Algebra 1, but it's just such a headache.
Oh, that sounds, all stuff. That sounds horrible. Like when you have bigger fish to fry, right? You got bigger things, like you're not, like you should be focused on decision, bigger, you know, better decision making, like taking care, you know, of students' needs, things like that. Like, yeah.
We're going to go ahead and get started on this conversation because I was intrigued when Steve hooked us up and Stories with Styles project. Go into detail about what that is for you.
Yeah, so we, so I work at the county, at Kings County Office of Education, and my colleague, she's the VAPA consultant, the Visual and Performing Arts, and whereas I do like more of the math, ed tech, computer science stuff. We had this conversation in April about our backgrounds in education, her being a background in ELA, started talking about how she used to weave poetry into her class and Tupac poems and Tupac lyrics into her English class. And so I was like, oh yeah, cool. I goes, you know, and then me telling her, and we had just met, we were like both first year consultants with the county. So we're getting to know each other. Me expressing to her like, oh yeah, when I was in the math class and I used to teach math, I wrote this grant and I had turntables in my math class. I had PA speakers. I would have kids like DJing. I had a beat pad, a Novato launch pad, beat pad, and I would have kids do that. Just so like, hey, if you got a break or if you're done with your work early, I had my classroom walls painted with whiteboards everywhere. So kids were always up, not at their desks. They were doing math on the walls. And then I was like, hey, if you're done early, you want to DJ, you want to play some beats while we work, you know, trying to just create a fun environment that I want to go to work to, but mainly that kids, that everyone wants to be in, you know, like a fun space, you know, and so we vibed off of that, and she was like, I would love to write a grant like that to loan out to schools that we support. And so the idea kind of started with that. And then over the summer, she ended up taking like a 30% principalship at a local juvenile court school. And so when I came back from the summer, she was like, oh yeah, I'm a juvenile court principal, part-time consultant now. She's like, let's make that happen, what we were talking about. And she says, I want a legit three in the three units that we have there, right, within the juvenile court school. She goes, I want legit music studios. You know anybody that could do that? I was like, oh, yeah. I go, I got my buddy, who's a hip-hop artist, local hip-hop artist. He's a producer, videographer. He does, like, he's worked with some big artists and collaborated with a lot of folks, and then does, like, videos, commercials for businesses now. Just super creative cat. My buddy Josh Levine. And I said, I got a guy. He can be a consultant. She was like, oh, we'll pay him. I could do a couple weeks, whatever. So brought that homie in. And like he's like, I'm like, hey, you want to do this? Like, yeah. He's like, what? And I could get paid too? Yeah, like he was ready to do it for free. You know what I mean? wanting to work with kids, like, you know, because they don't get, when you don't get to work with kids, a lot of times people, you know how it is, right? And then you're like, oh, I get to help out. And he was like, but I could get paid too. I was like, yeah, dude, you're talented. So, you know, we're gonna contract with you. And then so we ended up pulling in, like, it got big, and my colleague Liz, she was like, she's just making it happen, dude. Like, you don't see a lot of leaders like that who just believe in kids and believe in giving the best experiences to kids, and you know, she's just, man, I can't give her leadership enough, because this, none of this stuff happens when you don't have a, if you don't have a leader like that. And so I brought in, we decided to do a storytelling program, storytelling through hip-hop, and we didn't call it Stories with Style yet. It was called, like, Digital Storytelling through Hip-Hop Culture and Spoken Word. And then, but we also brought in, because we were talking about hip hop, I brought in a visual artist. I got a friend of mine who's a professional graffiti artist, and he started a nonprofit in our area called Urbanists Collective. And it's a group of graffiti artists and designers and artists that work with the community on sanctioned murals. They just did a big Black Lives Matter mural tour in Fresno. They're always doing stuff for the community, teaching kids in after school programs, like doing murals for schools, teaching them digital skills, like super, super sick, nonprofit, doing amazing work, talented young cats. Like, it, I tell them they're like the Wu-Tang of, like, graffiti artists. You know what I mean? Like, he's like the RZA, and he brought all these talented, he just gets these cats from the streets that start off graffiti artists in the street. And he's like, hey man, you could do this. He's a professional. He gets sanctioned, and they're like, you can make a living doing this, and you don't have to get, you know, in trouble doing this. So so I brought him into it, and he actually created the name of the program, because he lives in Washington now. He moved from Central California to the Washington area, like Seattle, Washington area. Yeah. And he got one of his partners to keep running that nonprofit here. And he started one Urbanists Collective in Washington now. So we were Zooming one time, and he was doing this mural in his backyard, and basically it became our logo and our the name of the program. He's like, I just think Stories with Style. You guys are doing this. You're trying to get kids to tell their stories with style. So it stuck. I was like, you just named it, bro. You know, and then so we started piloting this program, teaching kids, you know, how to, giving them the option to how to tell their story by making beats. So we put Soundtrap all on their Chromebook so that they can make beats and tell their story through making beats or rapping or poetry or visual art. So my friend Josh, we brought him in to show them how to make the beats and give them advice on rapping. But a lot of the kids were already rapping. A lot of the kids been rapping, you know what I mean? And then we brought my friend Eric in to do the visual art piece. And so we were really inspired by Christopher Emden. If you know Dr. Christopher Emden, he's out of New York, man. He's like the one who started the hip hop ed hashtag, that, like, the movement to integrate more hip hop into education. They even had a conference, which I was trying to go to that conference last year before they shut it down. But I think they had one. It was like a hashtag that turned into actual conference, but then they were gonna have the second one, but then COVID shut everything down last year. Chris Emden had this lesson called how to write a rap that, like, this textbook company sponsored and put out. But then he also, like, in this lesson, he was like getting kids to talk about their persona, like, you know, you come, that you're the energy and the style that you bring to your rap, to your art. And then so one of the extensions was like, if once you decide your persona, you talk about the words that describe you, you know, and adjectives that describe you, you create what that is, then maybe you could take it further and create a piece of art that describes your persona. So we said, oh, this is cool. So I had messaged Chris Emden. I said, hey, could we use these parts of the lesson? And he's like, yeah. Take them, man. And then so we did that, and we did the add-on. So we had Eric Gonzalez zoom in and give the kids like some art tutorials on lettering, on some style, you know, that he's an artist. And so the kids created their personas and their like hip hop name or whatever their, you know, their street name was. And that was really beneficial for us, because them being incarcerated youth, we can't use anything that's identifiable in, you know, in video, in names. So the fact that they had an alias or their persona was like perfect, because we could release the raps that they have. And they ended up creating stickers from, we're actually having them made right now, but they create their art piece, and then they get created into a sticker pack of every kid who did some art, turn them into a sticker pack, and every kid's going to get a pack of all the kids' stickers and stuff. So yeah, it's like a dream, bro. I'll tell you, like, man, as, like Biggie says, it was all a dream. Like, I feel like this is a dream, because in my life, you know, just the way it's worked out, from like kid growing up in this little farming community to UCLA to, I mean, always being a fan of hip hop, like hip hop just like took me to another world as soon as I heard, you know, Run DMC and stuff back in the days when I was in middle school, changed the whole game for music for me. And I was like all in on it, you know, and so then, like, just to be able to say, like, now I get to go to work and teach hip hop to kids is like mind blowing to me. You know what I mean? And yeah, not just kids, like incarcerated youth, the ones who need it the most, you know. And I feel like we're doing something really special. It's like magic every day now going in. You know what I mean? And yeah, it's like when we talk about that that school to prison pipeline, you know, and you know, these unjust you know, discipline policies and things like that. You know what I mean? And we look at the stats of incarcerated black and brown kids, black and brown males mostly, you know, and like every kid that's in there, like a black and brown kid, you know, in this. And I've seen them come alive. You know what I mean? Like, just, it's like giving a plant, a wilted plant, like some water and some sun. And we just kind of like opened up the windows a little bit and shined some light on them, saying, hey, you know, this skill that you have and the story that you have, like, we want you to tell us. You know what I mean? And we gave them some space, gave them some tools, gave them some people around them. And it's been like, I mean, it's overwhelming, man. It's emotional when I go in there now, the stuff they're, how much they've grown just since January when we started the program. Like, it's crazy, man. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
I want to, what rap, you said Run DMC. It's kind of a two-part question I'm going to ask. What other influences aided you on your vision for Stories with Style? And what influences, rap influences for the kids you deal with, do you see prevalent with them?
So, like, I mean, my influences, like, I'll say, like, Run DMC for sure set it off for me, you know, and then, in high school, you know, that was like around the time when Dre and Snoop were taking over the West Coast. So that was just taking over everywhere. So that hit, but it was like, you know, Run DMC, but then, but also like around the time that, like, you know, I don't know if it was a year after or something, but like when Wu-Tang hit high school, like, I don't know, was that 92?
92, 93, 96, right in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say, like, the Wu-Tang, like, being a West Coast person too, and just hearing those sounds, like, really, I was like, oh, wow. Like, everything went from, like, real clean, you know, that type of production that the West Coast was doing to, like, really raw, like, more real, not as polished, but, like, super brilliant, you know. And so, like, Wu-Tang, I'd say that's probably my favorite group right there. And then the other one, when I got to college, like really diving into Outkast and like Goody Mob and stuff like that. I was, when my freshman year, you know, like Outkast perform with Goody Mob. They came onto UCLA's campus and did that, like, blew my mind. They brought a Cadillac started hopping like, on stage and stuff. It was, yeah. But I mean, for me, it's, you know, we try to influence, as far as influencing the project, we're trying to just like, well, we this is the first iteration of it, but we try to stay true to the roots of the origin. And, you know, and I actually had to dive back in myself, which is awesome, because if I'm going to do this this program justice and do hip hop and the culture justice, I need to honor the history and the roots. So it actually forced me to do a deep dive on like the origin. And so I learned a whole lot about Kool Herc, I'll be honest, that I didn't know, and about, you know, like the merry-go-round that he started when he started with the breakbeats, and, you know, and I thought that was a, that's just such a, we've got a beautiful clip that I found on YouTube that was like showing the kids like where this sound came from, the, you know, where the idea that sparked it of him like noticing the crowd, how the crowd would get real live during these breakbeats of James Brown tracks, and then like how just connecting that breakbeat with that one. And so trying to stay true with that, and then trying to like just talk about everybody that's innovated at each level and push the needle. You know what I mean? Like LL with his bravado and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Rakim, you know, with the precision, with the lyrics and stuff like that, leading into, you know, Dre, you know, Outkast, I think, you know, Eminem. I mean, just trying to hit like a lot of the progression. And we did this pretty quickly, so we got up and running, but this is actually my homework for the next, for my spring break, is I'm just diving into full on, like I'm going to college for hip hop history, man. Like me and my colleague, Jessica, we're going to rewrite the hip hop history part of it and like fully flesh it out, how it integrates through the whole thing. So I'm like, I've never been more excited to do homework than I am like this upcoming break. But like the stuff that they're into is, I have no idea. You know what I mean? Like, like they say these names and they're like, oh man, I mean, they, dude, just the way that when I first jumped in there and they're like sitting back, like looking at me like, who's this guy? And they're like, man, that's not rap. That stuff's no good. People don't do, you know, hating on it all, dude. Like, and like, man, you know, when we try and play some of the original stuff, they're like looking around at each other and it's like, hey man, just, you know, this is where it came from, man. Nah, the stuff we listened to today didn't come from there. I was like, yeah, man, just give it a chance, dude. But it came from somewhere, you know. And little by little, we would show them. And then little by little, they would be like, oh, this, you know, that was kind of sick. I like that verse. When they would, not necessarily when they would hear it, but then when they would hear it and then see the verses and see the lyrics on the page to see, yeah, like, the poetry of it and the intricacy of the rhyme sometimes. You know, then they would start to appreciate it. Like, man, you see, because we were trying to, you know, really, because with Liz's background being an English teacher, so we would like start it off with playing a track and then be like, you know, look at this, this alliteration that's used. You know, this is an example of alliteration, you know, so it's, you know, and I forget which one I first started using for the alliteration example. And then the kids were like, man, nobody uses alliteration in rap. And then the probation officer, one of the probation officers, man, he stepped up. He goes, you think Tupac was no one? And he goes, look at Tupac's America's Most Wanted, picture perfect. I paint a perfect picture with precision. And I was like, damn, Contreras, good call on that one, bro. I didn't think about that Tupac. And then it was instant cred. And it was like, here's the beauty of it. It was like building the relationships between the kids and the probation officers too, because the probation officers are raised on hip hop, but they don't. There's a huge divide, and that relationship sometimes is not good. You know what I mean? And and so it's been like, it's healing, bro. Like, this is the only way I could describe it. It's like very healing, and there's like magic happening. But one thing I will say, like, is speaking of Tupac, like, no matter who they listen to, they all love him. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so we started it with like the storytelling of Tupac's looking at Dear Mama, because you're going to get 90-some% of people that are going to love that song. I mean, maybe some people, you know, I know that there's some people that don't have a great relationship with their mom, and that might trigger something else to not be that for most. But most folks are going to really relate to that. And then we took it, like, look at Tupac's personal, how he's very personal with his story. And then we took it to his Changes song, where he's like, look at how he's not talking about personal. He's talking about big things, community things, like issues about we got to change the way we eat. We got to change the way we treat each other, you know, if we're going to survive. He's talking about his people. You know what I mean? So we try to take it from storytelling from an individual to a group and then kind of weave in and out through that stuff. So that was a nice, like, a common area that we had, even though some of the guys they listened to, like Mozzie, Little Mozzie, they had some interest. I don't know who that, I mean, I still don't know, but I would download the instrumentals for them because they just wanted to rap over those beats. And I'm like, I could download the beats for you, and we put them in the Google Classroom. But, and then one that they liked was J. Cole. When I brought up this idea of J. Cole, and they were like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So they were down with J. Cole. So we've been surveying them too, because I'm like, I'm going to tell you, I know the old stuff. I don't know the new stuff. So at the same time, like, we're trying to learn from you. You tell us the new stuff you listen to, because I don't know. And then I'll do some research on that, and then we'll bring it into the next program, be better for the next kids, you know. So I'm not, you know us, I'm going to say that it was better back then, but I'm not closed off to, like, learning. Because some of the stuff they did refer to me where I had a really bad opinion of it, I was like, it's just going to be about this, that, and the other. But I was listening to it, I was like, oh, this is a good story, man. This is a human story about homeboy's struggle. And I think it was one of those Mozzie ones, but you know what I mean? Just keeping an open mind with it. So I don't want to shut it completely off, because then, you know, I'll be a hypocrite if I did that. But
let me get you one more question before I get y'all. Have you thought about actually creating? I know you got the project as far as the turning rap into storytelling. Have you ever thought about either doing some type of, I guess, I'm trying to think of the word, more like a SEL program, far as not SEL program per se, what you do, you're doing more live SEL, like live trial, but I mean, you turn it into an actual, like, modular learning to be marketed.
Oh man, it's all SEL. Like, this is social emotional learning in its purest form, right? Like, this is, one of our biggest influences is when we got started, we've been, like, lucky enough to connect with, you know, people on Twitter, and, you know, Christopher Emden, you know, let us use that resource. A person in our office said, oh, you should talk to these guys in the Bay Area called Beats, Rhymes, and Life. And so in the Northern California, these guys are hip hop therapists. So they're a group of professionally trained therapists that use hip hop as a tool of therapy. And, like, the more, as soon as I heard that those three words put together, hip-hop therapy, I was like, yeah, that's what it is, you know? And I was like, I never thought about that. But, and so they helped us to say, like, yeah, what they said was, like, they would be therapists on campus, and they would try to get kids to come in, and they were like, no kids were coming in, you know, to talk to them about the problems they're going through, and they know that they were going through a bunch of stuff and trying to. And they said, but they would look out on the playground, and they would see kids in a cipher all right there. So he said, okay, we're just going to go meet them where they're at, go to the cipher, see what they're talking about. And then he realized, oh, my God, they're talking about – so he was telling us about this and telling us about how they designed their curriculum, like gave us some great advice, like just have them write and rap every day. Every time you see them, write something, rap something. Don't make them wait till, like, the third, fourth week till they rap. Or, you know what I mean? Don't write, you know, and write something, rap something. And so we're like, and we didn't have it like that, but then it changed. Yes, that's how we got to do it. We're eventually trying to get trained to go, because we want to go and get trained by this hip hop therapy group and attend their training. Like, now in our office, we're trying to get, we have funds for that, because what we found is, like, we're with this mode of expression, this form of expression that they have now, like, there's a lot of trauma that's coming up in these lyrics, and the heart is, like, opened and pouring sometimes. So that's a concern I have. Like, it's beautiful, but I also scared, because I'm not professionally trained to deal with something that some real trauma that comes up, and we need to be trained for that to be able to, because it could, you know what I mean? That's a fine line of delicate. I want to be educated on the correct things to say to provide these young people guidance to help heal. And I don't want to be that, say the wrong thing that could like send it to do it down the wrong way. So we're trying to do that, and it's definitely like, they're like working together before they started off. We talk about social emotional learning and relationships. Like there was not a lot of relationships going on. You know what I mean? They were all a lot of individuals, but now, man, they're like, hey, can I move my desk by him? Cause we want to collaborate. I'm going to write my verse and we have to work together. Cause I got to write my verse right after when he spits. And so I got to listen to him. And you're like, yeah, yeah. So before you know it, man, and this really just happened the last 2 weeks, like they're pushing their desk together and they got to ask the probation officer, like, is it okay? Yeah, yeah. And they're talking, listening to each other, understanding each other's stories. You know what I mean? Like the probation officer told me when they go back to their rooms or cells, I mean, they're like, we're helping each other out. He's like, they're asking for dictionaries. Like I need to come up with different words that say this. And you know what I mean? It's all wins. You know what I mean? All wins. Confidence, like building the confidence, because these kids have assets. You know what I mean? We're just like kind of, just like I said, putting some sunshine, a little bit of water on them. You know what I mean? Giving them the water, the conditions for growth, you know?
I do this every time on Zoom, Google Meets, whatever. I always have myself muted. Get them on there. Ed, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk with me about your programs and everything. I really do appreciate it, man.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I appreciate you. You know what I mean? I know you're busy. We're all busy, especially in the pandemic and stuff. But appreciate you making the time. And if anybody – we don't have a website up yet, but we do have a YouTube channel if anybody's interested in taking a look at some of the stuff the kids have created. We just got that up. The school's called JC Montgomery. And I can drop the link in the chat if you want to. Yeah. And then
we do that in your Twitter handle.
And my Twitter handle. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Man, thank you, Fabian.
That's no problem, man. While you're doing that, we'll be right back with more Council Connection right after this.
This is the part of the show where I do my housekeeping items, of course, where, we just talk about things that are upcoming and where you can follow the podcast, yada, yada, yada. Of course, you can follow me on the Twitter at Fabe, the PSC. You can follow me on Facebook at The Council Connection with Fabian Vicks. You can follow the podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Breaker, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and, of course, Apple Podcasts. We have some exciting episodes coming up later on this year. We are going to be discussing people of color and superheroes and how that ties into school council, of course, with Caroline Perry and Steve Sharp, friend of the show. We're also going to be looking forward to talking to two school counselors later on this year. We'll have them back on again. If you're a counselor, you'd like to get on the show, just talk about things that you're doing to revolutionize our position or change, or be a change agent for our kids, hit me up on the Twitter or Facebook, or, you can leave a message on the podcast. You can also leave a message for us through our, something we've been pushing for 2 years, the parent portal, that is on the Anchor website. If you click on the messages link, of course, you have to create an account, leave the message, and we'll put it on the air. We haven't had anybody take that link yet, but we'd love for you to participate and get your feedback on the show. We're always looking at ways to get better. And I never say this enough, and I appreciate those that do listen to the podcast. It has been very, very cool that you guys have taken time, take your time out of the day, listen to my podcast, and I really do appreciate it. Now we'll be back with my final thought on Paul Pierce. Faye's final thought. As I said in the previous segment, and previous podcasts, and if you listen to Fort Valley Boys, also be found on Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and on Apple Podcasts. I love sports. We argue about sports every week. We halfway agree on anything we talk about. We argue, we clown each other, all that type of stuff. But one thing we did agree on our previous podcast was Paul Pierce. Y'all thinking, what does Paul Pierce have to do with school council? I'm going to get to that in just a moment. For those that might not know who Paul Pierce is was an All-American. Played at Kansas for a couple years in 1998 with Jock Vaughn and Ray LaFrance. They had a great team in 98. They lost, of course, they lost to Utah in the March Madness. And Utah went on to go to the national championship game against Kentucky, where they lost to Kentucky. My favorite basketball team, college basketball team. And he went on to get drafted by Boston Celtics. Of course, you know, after his first year, he got stabbed in his back, almost died. And he had basically a decent career until he got with KG, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen. Won a championship against the Lakers in 2008. Went to the finals again in 2010 and lost. Lost to the Heat a couple of years in a row. Then got traded to the Nets. Then he bounced around from team to team and retired. He became an analyst for ESPN in 2017, I want to say. 2017-2018. He wasn't a bad analyst, but he wasn't all that great because you could tell he is somewhat of a hater. Who has some hot take opinions, and of course, if you're on television, especially on ESPN, to get noticed, you need some hot take opinions, and you know, but you had to be justified in saying those things. And his personality was he always needed attention because he was never recognized being one of the NBA greats or whatnot. And one of those instances was in the 2008 finals after game one. And during game one, he was put in a wheelchair and wheeled back to the locker room. And that was one of the most hilarious things I saw when I watched those finals that year, that he was in a wheelchair, that he was hurt so bad he had to be pushed to the wheelchair. And he thought he got shot on the court. Came back, run on the court, played fine. Just somebody needs some attention. Same thing when he was on ESPN. I say was. If you don't follow sports, or Paul Pierce for that matter, Mr. Paul Pierce had an Instagram live video where he had barely clothed women twerking and dancing and popping and locking and popping. In his background, he was smoking couldn't tell if it was a untipped black and mild or was a blunt filled with marijuana, but you could tell he was impaired to an extent. He's all live on there with alcohol and weed and female dancers, we'll say that, and saying come through while you get a haircut. Keep in mind he's under contract with ESPN, which is owned by Disney. His performance had slacked off in the last year and a half, 2 years, to a point where, you know, some of his appearances have been cut down or whatever. And this just did it for ESPN, where they basically fired him for a morality clause in his contract. Y'all still saying, what does this have to do with school council, Fabian? What does it have to do with it? Well, let me tell you what it got to do with school council. When we talk to our kids on social media and how we present ourselves on social media and what we post and send or tweet or snap or whatever things we do on TikTok, those things can't follow us and make us lose a lucrative job that we like or love. Paul Pierce is going to the Hall of Fame this year, but at the same time, you lost your income based on you going live with strippers, weed, and alcohol. Knowing that you had a morality clause in your contract. Now, some people saying he shouldn't have got fired. That's his dream. Yeah, but you also, when you sign these contracts, you got to make sure you know what you're signing. So when we talk to our students on a daily basis, we talk about how social media can be a great weapon in the positive or in the negative for them. Look at folks like Josh Allen. He dropped from the draft because of him using the N-word years ago in high school. Or there's some college athletes, not high school athletes, that are trying to go to a big D1 school, and they look at your social media and they go back. I mean, they go back years to see what you post, and that can take away from a major scholarship from Clemson or Alabama or anywhere you want to go. So let Paul Pierce be a lesson to those out there that's aspiring to be an NFL player or go to the NBA or even work for a Fortune 500 company. They do look at your social media and see what in the world you're doing that could be in a positive or a negative light for their company. And ESPN saw that Paul Pierce's performance is already going down, and he posted this on IG. They're thinking, well, it's a morality clause. Plus, I could look at it like this too. This is probably the reason why his performance is going down. Could be it. I don't know. That's a man personal business, but also get this. This is the funny thing about Paul's situation. If it would have came from anybody else's page and he was there and they recorded it, they said they wanted to fire him. So this came from his page. He knew what he was posting. So this is the crazy. That's crazy. So all I gotta say is, in the mortal words of Herm Edwards, don't press send. Don't press in. Because I'm going to cost you a cushy job. I want to thank you for listening to my podcast today. I want to thank Ed Campos for popping in with me. And we out. Second nature, keep a chip in my hair like it's second nature. Big wonder make me sad like second nature.